accession number 23787, reel number 7.
Main road was led by
Major Dillon, Reel 7. We're talking about the German attack on Kiriakou, led by a British renegade corporal. I believe you said Corporal Bill Wright.
Corporal Bill Wright.
And what happened then? He'd been refused.
Refused permission to go down because he knew too much. So in order to get down, this was before I arrived, he had inflicted a self-inflicted wound by shooting the top of his thumb off. You know, as can happen. Sadly, the bullet not only took the top of his thumb, it went into the foot of a shepherd. His foot was very dirty, and he died of gangrene. And my first job was looking after his widow. Bill Wright had gone down to it, and I'd forgotten about Bill Wright, but a lot of the villagers knew him. The German force that came up and attacked us, the one that came up from the main road, was led by Corporal Wright, who had said, we have ways of making you do this because we have your wife in prison. So he did. He guided them. And we were very nearly caught. That afternoon, one had heard rumours of an attack. I was called to the telephone, which was a very primitive thing, and a very guttural English voice said, is that Major Brown? I said, yes, who's that? That's Major Brown. I said, yeah, don't you put it down. It was a German officer. And come first light next morning, they came from all directions. And we just managed to get out of the village. We saved the wireless set, but not the engine or the batteries. We lost nearly everything, but survived.
What do you remember of the evacuation? I mean, how much pressure were you under?
Tremendous. It was so acute. We just about got dressed, that was all, ran up the mountains.
And did the villagers evacuate as well?
Yes, those that could. The Germans, when they got, they burnt the village. Anybody they found, they killed. And then commenced a period of considerable hardship, surviving in the, you know, in the open.
Was this on Mount Helicon itself?
Mount Helicon, yes.
How did you manage?
Well, it was uncomfortable at first. A loyal Greek, later on became mayor of his village. He produced money. We hard worked and we built huts up in the mountains and survived that winter above the snow line.
I mean, were you actually carrying out any operations?
Not at that time. We were just surviving. What we were doing, and that again, that's in the book, during that winter, our main task was rescuing American Allied airmen who got shot down.
How did you go about that? And what was the procedure?
The procedure was that they'd get shot down and they would parachute out. And it was mostly shepherds would find them and bring them to us. And Jeff had set up a place further west from me. He even had a small hospital there where we looked after these people and evacuated. That was our main task during that winter, was and information, a continual supply of information of German troop movements, and there was very little we could do.
Now, you seem to have had quite a lot of sources. I'm looking now at the Lillian Station personnel
list.
Yeah,
it grew.
And this is obviously towards the end, but you seem to have a fair number of agents in the locomotive sheds,
yep.
and mountain agents, mule drivers, and all this sort of thing, motor depot places. How did you go about recruiting? I mean, who recruited these agents?
Well, I suppose word of mouth, and one interviewed people. For instance, the local agents, we were always in fear of an attack from the Germans. The mountain area, there were three or four approaches that a German might come by. In each village, we used to appoint two agents and pay them. Their sole task was, in the event that more than five Germans came to their village, they were always coming up foraging and so on, if more than five Germans were in the village, Agent 1 would leave whatever he was doing, walk up there and tell me, there's five Germans in the village. If for more than, I said, thank you very much, five, don't worry about it. If for more than 50, the other fellow would come up and say, sir, there's quite a lot down there. And then fellow from the other side would say, sir, there's 25 in my village. He would say, oi, oi, look out, something's up. And that worked very well. It was worth paying the money. Our ammunition was money. We spent a lot. Gold.
Were you pushing at an open door? Were they willing to help? Oh, yes. The gold sort of helped.
Well, the gold helped, because one had to think they were desperately poor. It made the difference. It made the difference to them, a considerable difference. And at one stage, we were paying compensation. When the Germans burnt a village, we were paying each householder a gold sovereign, a nominal sum, but then it was worth about £50, I suppose, or £30. And then that stopped, sadly. Politics, I think, I don't know. It made tremendous... I felt we did more good, in a way, by helping the poor civilians who were being... than by blowing up the old German truck, because all that happened was there were more civilians killed or more atrocities, which I've got a list there.
I'll come on to
you. You see that.
There's a list of personnel eligible for claims.
Yes, that I put up. I recommended.
And what was that about?
Well, they'd served us in various capacities. Very few of them actually got any. What they mostly got, signed by the Commander-in-Chief, a certificate of service, which in fact turned out later to be quite valuable, that after the war, the Greek government had become right-wing by then. They wouldn't recognise the war service of the partisans, particularly the LS partisans. They said, we don't recognise you. Then the government changed, and they said, why shouldn't a partisan of whatever persuasion who served, say, 2 years in the mountains, receive a pension like a soldier might, or a gratuity? So they did. Then the movement said, what about chaps who served Major Brown? They weren't in uniform, but they served. So this Commander-in-Chief certificate suddenly became very valuable, because they presented it to the Greek Ministry of Defence, and they were put on the list for a pension or a gratuity. And I was being persecuted up until, honestly, quite recently, letters from the military attaché in Athens. Mr. Papadopoulos from so-and-so says he served you night and day from 1940, whenever. Is this so? Because I couldn't think why. I said, well, they all helped us, they all did. But if I signed a bit of paper, it meant it was worth money. Quite rightly so. They got nothing very great, but they got £1,000, they got something. So if they were on that list, I referred to, if they're on my list, I can't remember most of them, but if they're on that list, then they served.
Now,
in some capacity or another.
There is a list of a large number of German officers responsible for the atrocities. Yeah. How did you become aware of these atrocities? I don't know whether you can comment on any of them.
At the end, I think, is a list of witnesses. Well, the worst thing, which is, it was probably the worst episode in the German occupation, except Kalavryta, was the massacre at Dystymo. Should I tell you that?
Yes, don't.
Is it?
It's on
the 6th of June, we invaded Normandy. I thought it would be a good idea to let people know in the surrounding villages. They didn't have radios and they didn't have newspapers. So I got on my horse with two companions and rode off round the villages giving them the news. By the evening, we got to the village of Desfina. These names are important. Desfina.
That's D-S-F-I-N-A.
D-H-E-S-F-H-I-N-A. Desfina. A village which we'd always been a bit suspicious of, but the LS detachment commander said, you're quite safe, Major Brown. I've got men here. You rest assured you'll be safe. So we went to bed. Fortunately, we got up, as always, very early in the morning, and I was sitting having a cup of coffee on the veranda saw the other side of the square a German helmet and a rifle pointing straight at me. So I opened fire, and Henrik, my Polish crewman, fired. We took to our heels, and I said, towards the sea. I made an instant decision, towards the sea. We ran. That deceived the Germans. We got away. We got down to the sea and found a very old man with a very old boat, thank God, who was persuaded. I said, we'll either take your boat, or here are five gold sovereigns. I had some money in my pocket. He rowed us across the bay to Galaxidi. We'd escaped. The LS battalion, the 3rd battalion, were very upset that I, you know, I was on quite good terms with them, had very nearly been caught through their own idleness. The remainder of the battalion did a forced march overnight and ambushed the German party as it left Desfina, killed about 25 and burnt about 40 vehicles, and really put up quite a smart show. The Germans were even more angry by now, and the commandant at Levadia, L-E-V-A-D-H-I-A, decided that the village of Desfina was to be punished. So an SS battalion, which was handy, was dispatched to punish the village of Desfina. The officer in charge had a Greek map, which he couldn't read properly. He got to the village of Distomo, D-I-S-T-O-M-O-N, which was between Levadia and Desfina, not as far, which was entirely in, had nothing to do with any of this. The villagers were going about their work in Norway. The Germans surrounded the village and killed every single man, woman, and child, burnt the village to the ground. Mistake. And that is considered to be one of the worst, and I have it on my conscience like forever. If I hadn't gone to Desfina, it would never have happened.
How did people react to massacres like that? I mean, was there anything that...
Well, it was all too frequent, but, I mean, that was on a very horrendous scale. There was virtually the entire population. Many years later, taking the family, we went to Delphi and to go to Ossis Lucas, which is a monastery nearby. We had to go through Distomo, and I saw there was a statue which the Greeks had erected. It said, here on the 10th of June, which is by now the 10th when this happened, the Germans murdered 223, their names here under, and there they are listed, children, women, the lot. Round the monument was a group of German tourists photographing each other and laughing. And I went and saw the mayor, who hadn't been present. He was in Athens on the day this happened. So he said, you remember me? Yes, sir, I do. I remember you. How do you allow this to go on round that monument? He said, originally we used to stop them, but he said, now... we just take their money. The Germans, he bumped his head, the Germans are a sick race. It wasn't a battle. It said, here the Germans murdered. It's quite plain. That's a massacre. And that's hence we needed to know the names of people.
And there are a lot more,
a lot more on a smaller scale.
And would you be able to how would you track down the German officers responsible? I mean, did you know the German
officers responsible? We had our agents knew. I mean, they were garrison. The garrison was known. The names were known. So we had quite a good intelligence service finding out people's name, and the Germans also had a good system of finding out names. I don't know. We haven't got to that yet.
How would you get? You would collect the names of German officers responsible.
The Greeks collected all those names and regimental numbers and passed them over.
And at what scale of massacre would you start?
Like 10 or more. And there's a list there. It gives you sort of. Execution of 50 civilians at Rastomir, I think he spent at Rastomita on January 6th, 1944. The reason I know about this, one escaped, one fell down, the Germans thought they'd kill the lot. He wasn't, he was only wounded. At night he crawled down and got back up the mountain and told me. That's sort of way one heard. I knew about that one all right. One's forgot all this sort of debate, you know, it's all gone now, but that's how it was.
Now, you got rid of Jim Spencer.
No, I hadn't got rid of him. He was still there. He was a very good, fine man, Jim Spencer, but he was getting tired, is whatever the word is. What do they call it? Battle fatigue. I don't know what they got all sort of fancy names now. Then we didn't even appreciate what was happening to somebody to the extent they do now. He'd had enough.
What symptoms? I mean, you mentioned he was fighting.
He used to drink too much, and he used to go around and meet the ass and say, fucking communists, or something. I said, well, it's all very well, Jim. He said, but they are fucking communists. I said, but it doesn't help me if you actually abuse them in their own country. They don't like it. He said, well, anyway, so he was being... And then he used to apologise. He was... His nerves were stretched, very much so.
And
I was worried. There was nothing I could do at the time, but his relief was a complete miracle.
What happened?
The Battle of Kos, which you know about, and the Durham Light Infantry, they were overrun, and I don't know how many taken prisoner. We had agents on the railway line, and my agents were instructed to do what they could. They alerted the POWs on the station at Athens. When you get in the carriage, there's wire across the windows, but if you feel under the seat in whatever carriage it was, you will find a hacksaw and pliers and hammers and things. And Jim Armand hoisted this in. And when he got on the train, he checked. Yes, by God, bloody well, there is a hacksaw and there are things. So he said to the Sergeant Major, Sergeant Major, you heard what those Greeks said. It's true. There are these tools and we can escape. And the Sergeant Major said, don't you bloody dare to try and escape. It'd be the worst for us. They'll cut our chocolate ration if you try and do that. So anyway, he cut the wire. They got off and the Greeks had said, after the sixth stop or whatever it was, jump out on the left-hand side, that's the western side of the train, and keep walking and you'll be all right. Well, being Jim, of course, he got her eyes on the right-hand side of the train and walked the wrong way for 3 days. However, he eventually arrived with some companions. I said, what would you like, Jim? Or Sergeant Armand, as I called him then. Nice cup of tea. He was a real Geordie, you see. Cool, he said, that's the first cup of tea I had. And I said, what would you like to do next? He said, I said, we can send a signal to your next of kin. No, don't bother about that. Can you send a signal to the Sergeant Major? I said, what do you mean? Sergeant Major, whatever his name was. I said, he'd be a POW. We could to appear. It could get there eventually. I said, what do you want? He said, Sergeant Major, how do you like it in the clink? I'm all right.
Now, his name was?
Jim Armand.
Not Dick, as in the book.
No, it's Dick Spencer, the Australian sergeant. Sorry, I got that wrong.
So they're basically being confused. Yeah.
Confused.
In the book. Yeah.
In the book. That's why I hadn't spotted that.
And another thing that happened around about this time was this business about Captain Bunny Warren, isn't it?
Yes.
But Captain Warren.
That's about the last
time. And also the case that ties in with Waldheim. I mean,
that's
a kind of obvious.
It's about this time the LS had got hold of some white Russian POWs, which they wished to execute. Because they thought they were royalists. I don't know what they thought. And they paraded them on the beach at a place called Sarandi and lined them up to shoot them with a machine gun. Well, being Greeks, the machine gun failed to work. The Russians charged forward, seized the machine gun, beat the firing squad over the head with it, and made off and got to Major Jeff's headquarters at Galaxidi. Jeff was embarrassed with these 25 rather depressed Russians who were drinking and what to do. He'd got this kaiki, which we used to use for up and down the Gulf, the good wheeze to try and get to Italy with the prisoners. With him at the time was a Captain Warren, who was a spare file. He had got a proper job. He said, you could be the escort. So he was briefed to escort these Russians on the kaiki to Italy. There was a Greek skipper who volunteered to go. I helped work out the fuel requirement, and we got on the black market double the amount of fuel. The Greek had also worked out how much fuel, sold half of it, Greek. They set off, they got through the minefields, because we'd managed to get a chart of the minefields through the Red Cross, our agents in the Red Cross. The Kaiki got within sight of the coast of Italy, a headwind sprang up, they ran out of fuel, were blown back across the sea to Kefalonia, where they were intercepted by a German patrol boat. All except one Russian who escaped to tell the tale were shot on the spot. Captain Warren was taken prisoner, tried for his life by the Germans, was executed. One of the signatures on his execution warrant is that of Captain Waldheim.
And this is Kurt Waldheim?
Yes, later Chancellor of Austria, later head of the United Nations.
And were you, as you've mentioned, off tape, always claimed never to have been in Greece.
Exactly.
At that time,
the name Waldheim meant nothing. It meant nothing at all. Why should it? Nobody's ever heard of him. He was just a German officer. He was of no significance at all.
But were you aware that he was there at the time?
No, not at all. It's irrelevant.
It was just a name.
It meant nothing until after the war, when all these accusations came out, and it all was substantiated by this mock trial, and Hans Wender and Miriam went to see him in Germany. He said, of course I was there. Nothing bad ever happened when I was on duty, he said, Hans Wender said.
You can explain on tape who Hans Wender is.
Hans Wender, are we on tape now? Hans Wender was my wife Miriam's form master at the German school before the war. He was a Greek speaker. So when the war came, he was conscripted into the German army. He was in fact a chief clerk in the Abwehr intelligence office, a member of which was Waldheim, although he denied it. That's how that came about.
Now, one unpleasant story in the book is about an execution that you had to go through of a Greek traitor. Could you tell us that story?
He was one of 10 loco agents in Larissa, locomotive sheds. He betrayed for money, I forget quite how many of his comrades to the Germans, who executed them. The Greeks got hold of him with this evidence which he did not deny, brought him in front of me. What was I going to do? I didn't really know what to do. Somehow I had a copy of the Manual of Military Law. I don't know how that found itself to my station, but it was there, and I looked up something to charge him under, and the only thing I could find was betraying a comrade in the face of the enemy, section whatever it was of the Army Act, punishment death, or such less punishment as the court may care to award. I thought, that's an authority, not that he's in the British Army. So he was charged. He was marched in by my two Poles, who were great big sons, marched him in front of me. He stood there like a statue, and I read all this out and said, do you deny it? He said, no. I said, why did you? He said, they were going to give me 50 gold sovereigns. He said, actually, they only gave me 25. I said, what do you think is going to happen to you? He said, I suppose I'll get shot. I said, you're bloody well right. And he was. And I then thought, what happens next? I needn't have worried, because Sergeant Dick Turner, the Australian, had anticipated this. He had the men dig a grave. There was a firing squad. He was down, gone within 5 minutes of being sentenced, dead and buried. And Panayotti, my servitorus, my kind of waiter chap we had, came in with a large bottle of booze and said, gentlemen, I think we all deserve a drink after that. And that was that. Only time I've ever had to do anything like that, but it was one of those things. And I'm very glad that all the Greeks, without exception, thanked me, said, you were quite right. I know he was a Greek, but the word proglotis, traitor, in Greek is the dirtiest word. He was a traitor.
So, now, what about the conditions of living that you were living?
By now, we're quite good. We were in... After the Kyriaki debacle, we were 3 months without a radio set, living virtually in the open. The villagers, in fact, collected in the village of Hostia, which I'm now the mayor of, 100 gold sovereigns and lent me, Greek peasants, with which we hired labourers, and we built log cabins up in the mountains and a cookhouse, and we existed for the rest of the winter and through in these huts till eventually the Germans, again another, some we don't know who led them, found them and burned them towards the end. But we survived all the time.
Now, what sort of food would you have?
Food, not bad, because again, our ammunition was money. If you have money, you'd be surprised what you can get.
And what about the sort of diet you were on? What sort of food were you getting?
Plenty of bread. Sadly, a lot of it maize bread, which is all right when it's fresh. Meat, there were shepherds, plenty of lamb. I had a fisherman chap who used to be my boatman, because we used to use the Gulf of Orient, who was a fisherman. He used to bring up lobsters quite frequently and fish. We didn't live badly. Beans, unlimited beans. Rather bad wine, rather sour wine. Ouzo. No, we fed all right. And then, of course, drops. They dropped from Cairo goodies like whiskey, like tins of bully, like tins of beans, like quite a lot of good stuff once we re-established communication. Because we were out of communication for about 3 months.
How did they get another radio to you? Well, I mean, what were the arrangements to get a replacement radio out?
The radio was right. It was a battery and generator.
Sorry, yeah. How did you get that? Sorry.
Dropped to Jeff, and then brought to me. And then we were all right. Because the set survived in a miraculous way.
Now, what's the next thing you remember happening? The incident in June with the, you know, Distimo, sorry, my pronunciation. what's the next thing after that? That was June.
We were asked to find out if the Germans would be prepared to surrender and remain under arms until such time as they were relieved by a British regular force, with the idea of keeping law and order in the built-up areas.
Now, by local commander, the commander of where? Livadia?
Well, Livadia, I suppose other people were given the same orders. My local commandant was Livadia, who was Attica, Boeotia, and quite a big southeastern Greece. Virtually covered my area. We were virtually oppos, as it were.
So how did you contact him? What was the whole process?
I wrote him a letter, which Milton Karatsolis, who later went with Stanley Lake to Athens, volunteered to take down and deliver. I said, you must put this in the hand of the German officer, not just post it. I said, you've got to volunteer. He agreed. I said, what did you do? He said, I went down to Livadia. I said I had a haircut, put on a clean shirt, because the Germans like it to be smart, gave myself a very stiff ouzo, marched straight up to the door and said, I have a letter for the commandant from the British officer. I've got to see him. He said, I was taken in, told to sit down, gave him this letter. And the letter which I wrote said that if he was willing to meet me with a view to discussing the future, I would come, accompanied by one companion, equipped with sidearms only, if he'd agreed to do the same. And I suggested a rendezvous, which was a mill just off the main road outside Livadia, about a mile or so outside Livadia. And I signed myself Major Brian, addressed him as
Major Brian.
Brian, my Christian name. I was known as Major Brian. The letter came back agreeing to this proposal, addressed to 85608 Major B. E. Dillon, the Royal Norfolk Regiment, which was, i.e., we know exactly who you are, old boy. So, which was quite impressive, really. So that was agreed that we should meet, and the meeting took place. But I, not altogether trusting things, cheated a bit, and I took with me my two, they were Austrians actually, machine Bren gunners, who I positioned near this mill, about 150, 200 yards away, under cover, where they had a good view of the rendezvous. And I said, on no circumstances to show yourself or fire at anybody unless I take my head off and point it at somebody. If I do that, you ought to shoot him dead. Is that quite clear? I was early at the rendezvous, posted these chaps, and tied my horse up round the back. Looking through my binoculars, I saw the staff car coming from Livadia. It stopped about 300 yards away. I'd caught two German soldiers with a Spandau machine gun, set themselves up behind a bush, covering the rendezvous. So I thought, oi, we seem to think the same, rather the same way. And we met this chap, who's not a bad old buffer. He was a World War I sort of dugout. And he was quite amused, and he said, I'm very sorry, I hear what you say, but I have my orders, and that is not to surrender to anybody. I intend to get back to the hotel.